Good evening, everyone. I want to thank everyone for joining us tonight for our second annual Pre-Shavuos Aseres HaDibrot series. Last year, intuitively, we did a three-part series on the first of the Aseres HaDibrot, and this year, equally intuitively, we are going to do a three-part series on the second of the Aseres HaDibrot. In case you were expecting a surprise there, I apologize in advance. I want to begin by thanking our sponsors. Our series is sponsored by Jennifer and David Miller, commemorating the yahrzeit of Rabbi Sheretz in front of the Racha. And tonight's shiur is co-sponsored by Hedy and Jay Richmond in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Chaim Yisachar Feigenbaum in front of the Racha. Those two very special neshamos should each have an aliyah and the shamayim through the Torah that we learned together tonight. The second of the Aseres HaDibrot is the mitzvah, or as we will see, mitzvos of Avodah Zarah. What I want to do tonight, as well as next week and the following, over the next 3 Mondays, is really explore this Dibra, this second installment in the set of 10. We're going to start, as we did last year, by offering a kind of halachic theological overview. This will be a shiur, if you will, on the topic of Avodah Zarah, and will hopefully give us perspective on what Avodah Zarah is about in the broadest sense. And then over the course of the next 2 weeks, we'll discuss practical ramifications of it in a variety of ways. We'll talk about the relevance of Avodah Zarah in our own lives, even as we no longer live in a realm in which Avodah Zarah is a temptation that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. And we'll talk about different ways in which perhaps there are reverberations of Avodah Zarah in contemporary society, in the world that we live in the spiritual world that we occupy as well. But again, for tonight, I really want to start with the basics. And the question that I posed for tonight is really, why is Avodah Zarah so bad? Our title is not just an Aveira. Why is Avodah Zarah really that bad? That's the question that I want to explore tonight. We're going to document why Chazal, or how Chazal, indeed deemed Avodah Zarah so bad. And then we'll try to broaden the conversation and to discover why. Let's begin just by looking at source number one, which is the Psukim of the Aseres HaDibrot as they appear in Parshas Va'eschanan. This is actually the second of the Aseres HaDibrot. Of course, the Dibros appear twice. In the Torah, once in Parshas Yisro, and once in Parshas Be'eschanan. But here we have Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Otzeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim Mipesach Hatim. So the first of the Aseres HaDibrot is Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am Hashem your God. The first of the Aseres HaDibrot we again explored last year. The God that took you out of Eretz Mitzrayim. Oyi Elokecha Elokim Achirim Apanai. You shall not have other gods before me. Now, you'll note immediately that the way we read the Aseres HaDibrot, these are actually merged together into a single reading. The way the Aseres HaDibrot are constructed in the Torah, there are really two ways to break up the Aseres HaDibrot, what we call Ta'am Tachton and Ta'am Elyon. In other words, the Psukim of the Aseres HaDibrot are broken up in your average Chumash. When we read it together, when we read it on Shabbos Parshas Yisro, Shabbos Parshas Va'eschanan, we read it with a different trup, what we call the Ta'am Elyon, which merges all the Aseres HaDibrot into its own pasuk. So you have instances where a single dibra can extend for several psukim. For example, the fourth of the Aseres HaDibrot is Shabbos. There are several psukim that describe Shabbos, but we read them all as one single pasuk when we read it to reflect the fact that it is a single dibra. By contrast, you have several dibros that appear in one pasuk in the Ta'am Tachton, Lo Tirtzach, Lo Tinach, Lo Tignov. They're very short and they're all in one pasuk. But when we read it as if each is its own distinct unit. Here we seem to have two dibros that are merged together. It's put together despite the fact that ostensibly these are two separate dibros, and that is something that's certainly noteworthy and that perhaps we will come back to at a later point. And the Torah continues, Losa Asad Khafesa, call to Munah, Sheba Shamaimi Mal, Sheba Aras Pitachas, Sheba Maimi Tachas Aretz. Don't make for yourself graven images. Losa Shach Avel, Lohem, Velosa Ovdim. Don't bow to them, don't serve them. We have here the second of Aras HaDibrot, which again pertains to Avodah Zarah. Now, it's a bit of a misnomer to say it is the mitzvah of Avodah Zarah, because the truth is there are many mitzvahs pertaining to Avodah Zarah. If you look in source number two, we're not going to explore all of these right now, but if you look in the Sefer Achino, he notes that within this second dibra, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 mitzvahs. Mitzvah hamana b'metzias Hashem, that's really the first of the dibros, the mitzvah to believe in Hashem. We spoke last year about whether or not that's actually a mitzvah. Some count it, some others, including the Bahag, do not count it. They think it's so basic that it can't even constitute a mitzvah. And then you have four additional mitzvos that are derived from the second dibra. Shelo na'am in aloha bilti Hashem levada. We shouldn't believe in any other gods. Shelo la'asos pesel. We shouldn't make graven images. Shelo la'ishtach avos la'avod zara. Shelo la'avod avos ramasha darka lehe aved. You have four isurim, four prohibitions that emerge from the second of the Aseret HaDibros. It's a misnomer to say that the Aseret HaDibros are 10 mitzvos. This is true of many of the Aseret HaDibros. Many of them have a number of mitzvos included within them. Shabbos as well has several mitzvos under the moniker of Shabbos most generally. But again, they all pertain to a general theme, which is the theme of Avodah Zarah. And I think we know that Avodah Zarah is indeed not just another Aveira. Any Aveira that is recorded in the Torah is bad. Any prohibition should be avoided, of course. But Avodah Zarah seems to have a higher status. It's really out of bounds. And the question is, why? So let's begin to document where Chazal tell us in the first place that Avodah Zarah has this different status, that it is somehow worse than other Aveiras. Now, if you had to point to one halakha that indicates that Avodah Zarah is somehow qualitatively different from other Aveiros and is qualitatively worse, what is the halakha that one would point to? I think it's a pretty well-known halakha. The halakha of Yehareg Al-Yav. And we're just from a Gemara Sanhedrin of Ayin Dalet Amrah. Let's take a look at the Gemara. Source number three. Amrah Rabbi Yochanan Mishim Rabbi Shimon Ben Yotzadak. Rabbi Yochanan reported in the name of Rabbi Shimon Ben Yotzadak. Nimnu v'gamru ba'aliyah Beit Nitzah b'lut. So they were hanging out in somebody's attic. Rashi says Beit Nitzah is somebody's name. So they were hanging out in somebody's attic in Lod. The Torah Shabbat Peh often gives us context to where conversations took place. So this was in Lod. And what was the conversation that was happening in this attic? Kol Avero Shabbat Torah, when it comes to any Avera in the Torah, im omrin lo adam, if they tell someone, second line of source number three, avor va'al teharek, someone puts a gun to their head and says, violate this prohibition or I will kill you. Your choices are violation or death. Says the Torah, says the Gemara Sanhedrin of Ayin after the small dash there, ya'avor va'al yeharek, you should violate the prohibition and spare your life. Do not be killed. But the Gemara says in bold, chutz me avodah zarah begiloy arayos u'shvichus damim. Famously, the Gemara says there are three exceptions to this general halacha, to this general din, and they are avodah zarah, idol worship, giloy arayos, prohibited sexual relationships, and shvichus damim, and murder. If somebody puts a gun to your head and says violate one of those three, then you have to take the bullet. You are not allowed to violate in order to preserve your life. So that is probably, again, the most famous articulation of the notion that Avodah Zarah is somehow categorically different, that is on a different qualitative level from your average mitzvah in the Torah, certainly different from 610 of the 613. Now, there are a number of features that seem to make Avodah Zarah distinct, even within this category. Before we document them, let's just take a look at the continuation of the Gemara, which I think is probably not as well known as the line that we just read a moment ago. The Gemara poses the question, but Avodah Zarah lo. Is it really true that you're not allowed to worship Avodah Zarah if you're facing this choice? Now, it seems like a crazy suggestion to us that you shouldn't have to violate Avodah Zarah. We all grow up learning that there are three chamuros, there are these three capital crimes for which you do have to give your life. But the Gemara considers the possibility that perhaps you would be allowed to violate and worship Avodah Zarah in order to save your life. And not only does the Gemara consider that possibility, the Gemara actually records an opinion in the Tanaim that maintains that you can do so. Hatanya, did we not learn in a Braisa? Amar, third line, Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael said, Minayin she'em amru lo la'adam. Avod avodah zarah v'al teharig. Minayin she'ya'avod v'al yeharig. Rabbi Yishmael says, how do we know that if someone puts a gun to your head, says, worship avodah zarah, or I will take your life, that you should, according to Rabbi Yishmael, worship Avodah Zarah. This is the same Rabbi Yishmael we quote in our davening every single morning. But Rabbi Yishmael maintains that you should actually do the Avodah Zarah. Talmud Lomar, he says, this is the end of the third line. What's the pasuk that he quotes? B'chai b'hem, and you shall live by the dictates of the Torah. V'lo she'yamos b'hem, Rabbi Yishmael Darshan said. You should not die by the dictates of the Torah. You should even serve Avodah Zarah and spare your life. That is the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael. If you'd ask Rabbi Yishmael how many chamuros are there, it's not clear what he would say. There's a machlokes rishonim as to whether Rabbi Yishmael disagrees with all three of these, or two out of three, or perhaps only Avodah Zarah. That's machlokes among the rishonim. Rabbi Yishmael, at the very least, holds that you should serve Avodah Zarah and not give your life. Now, even Rabbi Yishmael agrees that there's a limit to that. And here we come to the second bold line. We're going to return to these bold lines later in the shiur. Rabbi Yishmael says, Yachol apivu bifarhasya. Maybe, even if it's in public, you should worship Avodah Zarah and spare your life. Rabbi Yishmael says, that far we will not go. Talmud Lomar, Pasuk comes to tell you, V'lo sechalalu et shem kodshi v'niktashti. The Pasuk that appears in source number 4. We'll skip to number 4 for a moment. Actually, this week's parsha. Ushmartem mitzvosai ba'asisem osam ani Hashem. You shall observe my mitzvos, you shall do them, I am Hashem. V'lo sechalalu et shem kodshi. You shall not desecrate my name. That is what we call Chilul Hashem. V'lo sechalalu et shem kodshi. V'niktashti b'sof b'nei Yisrael ani Hashem b'kadosh shem. And I will be sanctified. V'niktashti is what we call Kiddush Hashem. So don't violate God's name. Rather, sanctify His name. And I will be sanctified. What is the lashon of the pasuk? B'sof b'nei Yisrael, in the midst of the b'nei Yisrael. So Rabbi Shmuel says, B'sof b'nei Yisrael, when you're in public, when you're with others, then make sure you sanctify God's name. In that instance, don't do avodah zarah. Be willing to give your life. That is what Rabbi Shmuel says. So even he agrees that if you're in public, you should give your life. But we have this opinion of Rabbi Shmuel that avodah zarah is not included in the big three. So where do we get the notion that you do have to give your life for avodah zarah? So let's read the conclusion of the Gemara at the end, after the second bold passage of source number 3. Gemara says, "Inhu de Amar Karabi Eliezer." Those of us who hold that you do have to give your life, we hold like Rabbi Eliezer. What does Rabbi Eliezer say? Third line up in the bottom at the beginning, the Sanya Rabbi Eliezer Omer. We learned in a brisa. Rabbi Eliezer says, "Be ohabta es Hashem elokecha b'chol levavecha b'chol nafshecha b'chol me'odecha. You shall love Hashem your God b'chol levavecha with all of your heart, and most importantly for us, u'b'chol nafshecha with all of your life." Famous story, Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, who was the ultimate optimist, even when he was being subjected to a horrific death by the Romans, he was laughing with joy. He said, "This is my opportunity to truly fulfill the simple meaning of the verse, even as his nefesh was leaving his body, as it was leaving this world, he was properly serving Hashem." The Gemara goes on to say, second line up in the bottom, why do you need both? Why do you need nafshecha? Why do you need me'odecha? Me'odecha means your possessions. In short, the Gemara at the end says, you have these phrases of b'chol nafshecha with all of your life and b'chol me'odecha with all of your possessions. Why do you need both? The Gemara says, because there are some people who value their possessions more than their life, more than life itself. So those people, the Gemara says, they have to give their possessions for Hashem. For most of us, who hopefully appreciate life more than just our material possessions, you have to be willing to sanctify Hashem with your very life. And that is the source for giving one's life as opposed to worshiping Avodah Zarah. So again, that's the source. We have Rabbi Yishmael who argues, and we're going to return to that basic source. Now, we'll just note for a moment that there were some Rishonim who seemed to paskin like Rabbi Yishmael. Seemed to paskin that you should not give your life for Avodah Zarah, but rather you should worship. It's based on the Gemara Avodah Zarah that's in Dalam Nalak. We're not going to go through that Gemara inside because the Shaka Mataya there is rather involved and complex. So we're not going to see the entire Shaka Mataya. But the implication there, at least one read of the Gemara, is that Rava holds like Rabbi Yishmael. Now, why is it very important that Rava holds like Rabbi Yishmael? Because almost always, the halacha follows the opinion of Rava. So if Rava agrees with Rabbi Yishmael, that would mean that when all of our kindergarten teachers taught us that there are three averos that you have to give your life for, they were actually fooling us. It's really only two. Or possibly, again, possibly one, possibly zero. The Tosfos adamantly reject that possibility in source number 6. Habitzina habiparesia. So Tosfos in source number 6 says, V'chora mashma derava sfirilek de'ones detzina eimlo limsor atzmo. It appears from the Gemara, if you're just reading it quickly, that Rava, as we said a moment ago, holds that you should do Avodah Zarah under duress rather than give up your life. Mitokach hayanira lipso k'rebi Yishmael. Deshari nami avodas kochavim betzina. It appears that Rava holds like Rabbi Yishmael. The Kashya says this is difficult. Dechas v'shalom shenifsok avodas kochavim ya'avor va'ayihari. Tosfos says it's impossible that Rava holds that way. And how do they prove that it's impossible that Rava holds that way? How do they prove it? Chas v'shalom. There's just no way. It's inconceivable that we would actually allow worshiping avodah zarah rather than giving one's life. Now, when you see the words chas v'shalom here, they're actually quite significant in indicating how strongly Tosfos held of this position. for two reasons. Number one, again, there's no countertext that proves that Rava didn't hold this way. And indeed, other Rishonim do read the Gemara that way. The Piskei Arid from one of the Italian Rishonim reads the Gemara that way. But Tosfos just find it inconceivable. They're not quoting an alternate text. They're not quoting a contradictory Gemara. It's just inconceivable that we would actually paskin that you can worship Avodah Zarah. And number two, usually, when Tosfos disagree with someone's reading of the Gemara, they don't often preface it with the words, Chas v'shalom. They could say, if it tamahu, they could say, if it kushya, there are lots of words that Tosfos use to disagree with, let's say, Rashi's reading of the Gemara or one of the other Rishonim's reading of the Gemara. But it's not often that Tosfos preface it with the words, Chas v'shalom. If they preface it with the words, Chas v'shalom, it means they don't just disagree, but they find it to be theologically outrageous. Also, bear in mind the context in which the Tosfos that we have were written. The context that the Tosfos were written. Tosfos were written where? When? We're talking about medieval Ashkenaz. Medieval Ashkenaz. Is medieval Ashkenaz a place, a time in which people understood Kiddush Hashem? You bet it was, right? Most prominently, in 1096, in the end of the 11th century, Pope Urban II decides to declare a crusade to conquer the Holy Land, to take Jerusalem from the infidel. And and the crusaders decide that, oh, that's a great idea. Let's go take Jerusalem from the infidel. But they also come up with a brilliant idea to slay the infidel among us. Who were the infidel among us? Of course, Rahman al-Litzan, it was the Jews. And three major communities of the Rhineland, Shapira, Vermaisa, and Magenza, Spires, Worms, and Mainz, were destroyed during this period. And there were many Jews who, in many instances, were killed. In many instances, even killed themselves. It poses a whole interesting separate halacha shaila. Some very stirring tshuvos from the Rishonim and some famous academic debates about this as well. But there were some Jews who killed themselves rather than being submitted to the baptismal waters, rather than adopting a foreign faith. They took this Gemara and Avodah Zarah in Sanhedrin, I'm sorry, very seriously. Chas v'shalom, in the words of Tosfos, would they ever submit themselves to the cross? So they wanted to make sure that they would die al Kiddush Hashem. Tosfos said, you can't tell me that we pass on like Rava, that somehow Avodah Zarah doesn't qualify. And really, all of those Jews should have just converted to some other foreign faith. It's inconceivable. We do paskin that we must paskin, let's just say, that Avodah Zarah is within this category of Yehari V'Aliyah. And not only is Avodah Zarah itself in this category of Yehari V'Aliyah, there are several extensions of Avodah Zarah that apply as well. And what I want to do now is note two conflicting comments of the Ram. The Ran was one of our Gedolei Rishonim at the end of the Tukufa Sfarad, the Chachmei Sfarad, the great Spanish Rishonim in Christian Spain, what they call the Catalonian school. And there are two comments that don't directly conflict with one another. They're not contradictory, but they certainly trend in different directions. And in order to understand why the Ran goes in these different directions, I want to offer a broader principle that will hopefully help us understand why Avodah Zarah qualifies as this Avera that one must give one's life for. And will hopefully, again, give us a broader understanding of what Avodah Zarah is about in a broader sense and how it may remain relevant even as the temptations of Avodah Zarah don't exist in our spiritual world. Let's explore this through a Gemara Avodah Zarah Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is not talking about Avodah Zarah. It's a Masechta of Avodah Zarah. Our topic for tonight is Avodah Zarah. But it's not talking about doing Avodah Zarah. It is talking about scenarios when outwardly others might perceive you to be doing Avodah Zarah. Take a look what the Gemara says. Source number 7. Yoshev lo kotz b'pnei avodas kofavim, lo yishchav yitlanam, b'nei shenireh k'mishtachav el avodas kofavim. Let's say you have a thorn somewhere in your foot, and somehow you're going to do some motion that requires you to bend down in order to remove it. The Gemara says, don't do that in front of an idol. Why? Because somebody from a distance is not going to realize that you have this thorn stuck in your shoe, and they're going to think that you are bowing down to Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara gives many other examples of this as well. I'm sorry, one other critical line at the very end of the first line of source number 7. Dim eino nira mutter. And if it doesn't appear that way, then it's a lack, mutter. The Gemara is going to explore what that line of eino nira means. But let's just take a look at some of the other examples here. Second line of source number 7. Espazru lo ma'osa b'pnei avodas kofavim lo yishchav yitlanam b'nei shenireh k'mishtachav el avodas kofavim v'eino nireh muter. You dropped your wallet. Coins are dispersed all over the place. You want to pick them up. Once again, you're going to be on your hands and knees picking up all of these coins. You know that you're picking up the coins, but to a bystander, it may look like you're engaged in some form of worship. So that too is prohibited. Eino nira mutter. Mayan amoshech with neavodis chuchavim. Let's say you're parched, you're very thirsty, and there's flowing water in front of avodis chuchavim. Once again, the Gemara says the same thing. Don't bow down and prostrate yourself in order to drink from the water in front of the avodis chuchavim, in front of the idol. Others might think that you are worshiping. Then, second paragraph of source number 7. My eino nira. What do these words, eino nira, mean? It could be interpreted in one of two ways. How can the word eino nira be interpreted? One option is nobody sees you, you can't be seen. So that's the first option the Gemara considers. Ilema delo miskazi, if you want to say that nobody sees you, the Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, but didn't Rav Yehuda say in the name of Rav? In any instance where the Chachamim prohibited something because of outside perception, it's even prohibited if you happen to be in a place where you can't be seen. Once they prohibited it, it was prohibited across the board, even if it happens to be a circumstance where you are not being watched, where you are not being perceived or witnessed, it's still going to be prohibited. So that can't be. If you're doing it in a way that it's not going to look like you're bowing down, that's really what the Gemara means. You figure out a way to take the thorn out of your shoe without bowing down with just, I don't know, engaging in some kind of other form of acrobatics. You manage to pull the thorn out of your shoe, then, and it doesn't look like you're bowing, then it's going to be much more quite intuitively, the Gemara says, then it would be much. Now, here's the key line for us. The Gemara says, Tzricha. I need all of these examples. The thorn, the money, the water, all of them are critical to teach the Semitic. Why is each one necessary? Three lines are from the bottom of source number 7. Utsricha. I need all of these. To eat on a coats, if you would have just told me that it's usher to remove the thorn, you should have, because I have a great alternative for you. Just walk 5 feet to the side, 10 feet to the side, and take out the thorn there. There's no reason why you need to do it right in front of the large idol. So there's a good reason to say it should be prohibited, because you could very easily come up with an alternative in which it doesn't look like you're bowing down to an idol. That's why I would have said it's prohibited. But the Gemara says, "Aval ma'os the lo afshar emalah." But the money that happens to be sitting in front of the idol, it's an unfortunate drop, it's an unfortunate location where my money fell, but I don't have the option of just walking somewhere else in order to take care of it. I have to take care of it in front of the idol. So maybe I would have said, look, the guy has no choice, let's permit it. So the Gemara says, nope, even though you don't have, we feel bad for you, even though you don't have a choice, even though it's not your fault, nonetheless, you can't appear to be bowing to Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara says, "V'itan ma'os de mamona, aval kotz tis'ara imala." I might have thought that only the money case is prohibited. Why? Because in the money case, you've lost a couple of pennies. Okay, please God, you'll be okay. But when it comes to tzar, when it comes to personal pain, Allah is acutely sensitive to personal pain. So when it comes to personal pain, maybe I'd say then it's mutter. But no, both cases are prohibited. And then the critical line for us: bold. V'itana hani tarti. If I would have just learned those two cases, the thorn, the money, mishum deleika sakana, I would have said it's prohibited because there is no sakana. Aval mayan, but the case where you're drinking water, deika sakana, where there is sakana, I have to talk about what that means, deilo shasi mace, where if you don't drink mayas, you would die. I would say maybe then you could drink from the water. Let the guy drink from the water. It's going to save his life. The Gemara concludes, Tzricha, I need all three cases to teach me, but in all three cases it is prohibited. Now I ask you a question. I put this last line in bold. What is striking about this last line of the Gemara? What does the Gemara appear to be saying? This case of drinking from the water is not just the case where you happen to be thirsty. Apparently, from the Gemara, you just read it simply. What is the case? You're dying. You're dying of thirst. It's not a case where, again, you just happen to need a drink. You just came from the desert or something to that effect. You're severely dehydrated, and you really need water in order to survive. And yet, the Gemara says, in this instance, even though you're doing it to preserve your life, what does the Gemara say? Aser. You're not allowed to prostrate yourself or to bend the knee in front of this idol in order to drink, in order to preserve your life. Now, what is strange about that Pesach of the Gemara? What's strange about Pesach of the Gemara? You're not doing Avodah Zarah. We preface this whole Gemara by saying this Gemara is not about Avodah Zarah. You're not worshiping anything. You realize how detestable the Avodah Zarah is, how unfortunate your situation is that you have to drink in front of the Avodah Zarah. You have no interest in engaging in its worship. And yet, the Gemara appears to be saying that even the outside perception of Avodah Zarah is sufficient to warrant giving your life. And whether this is indeed the case is actually a discussion, as I noted before, in the Ran. We'll get source number 8. Mashma, he says, if you just read this Gemara on a simple level, ta'apilu b'makom sakonas nefesh, azur liyos nire kimishdakav el avodas kochavim, ta'apilu ein adam ro'ehu. If you just read this Gemara on a simple level, it would appear that even the outside perception of engaging in Avodah Zarah requires you to give your life. No Avodah Zarah involved. No intent to defile yourself, to betray your faith. Just the outward perception of engaging in Avodah Zarah would require you to give your life. But the Ran says, there's got to be another way to read the Gemara. Second line. But after Od Lomar, maybe there's another possibility that you could say, to Akimayan Moshe, that even in this case of the running water, even though he only appears to be serving, he says, you know what? Really, in this water case, if there's a real sakana, if you really need it, you're really that severely dehydrated, then it would be mutter. What do you do with the line in the Gemara that says that you're going to die? So the Ran says in the lines after the second fold passage, source number 8, and when the Gemara says, if you don't drink, you're going to die, it doesn't really mean you're going to die. Again, it says you're going to die, but that's not really what it means. Maybe at some point in the future, maybe you'll reach a point of sakana. Maybe at some point in the future, you might come to a point of sakana before you're able to find water. Really, if you're actually in a situation of real pikuach nefesh, of real danger, of real sakana, then you would be able to drink. Now, if you look back at the words of the Gemara, which of these two reads is more compelling? The one that says you're going to die or the one that says you're not? The words of the Gemara were, you're going to die, Mayas, right? So there's one reading of the Gemara that reads this quite literally. The second reading of the Ran, that says, oh, sakana doesn't really mean sakana. You're going to die doesn't really mean you're going to die. All it means is maybe you will at some point in the future, is quite evidently rereading the simple meaning of the text. Why is the Ran doing so? Evidently because, at least in a second view, it's inconceivable that you'd have to give your life just for the outward appearance of doing Avodah Zarah. But indeed, we have that first view of the Ran, which appears to be the simple read of the Gemara, which suggests that you would. And the question for us is going to be why. It's one thing to say that Avodah Zarah is really bad, but just again, just an outward perception of Avodah Zarah, is that so bad as well? Why would you have to give your life for that? And again, this could, in theory, I will just note very briefly, pertain to a broader question about the nature of Maris Hayin. Is it an Isur Kali or is it an Isur Prati? Does it integrate into individual mitzvos or is it just its own broad general principle? That's a debate that exists by other mitzvos as well. For example, the Ibra Mositim Mitchell, where we have a debate between the Baal and Or and the Ramban regarding whether that would qualify for Yahar Kali Yavor. That's one possible question, but we're going to leave all of that aside for now. Maybe at some future occasion, we'll discuss those halachos too. But again, for tonight, we're going to look at why Avodah Zarah specifically has this extension to Maris Hayin. Now, if that is a major expansion of the Yehari Ba'al Yavor Halacha of Avodah Zarah, we find one significant contraction of it as well. In the Rambam, and it's a view that's adopted by the very same Ran as well. Take a look at source number 9. Source number 9 is the Rambam in the fifth parak of Hilchos Yesodei Torah, Yesodei Torah Parak Hay, Halacha Dalet. Now, this placement of all of these halachos, of giving your life for a mitzvah, when you should, when you shouldn't, it's all in the fifth parak of Hilchos Yesodei Torah. We're going to note the significance of that placement soon. But here the Rambam details what happens if you don't do what you are supposed to. Let's say there is a scenario where you are supposed to give your life and you don't. Or alternately, the first case discussed by the Rambam, a scenario where you are supposed to preserve your life, you're supposed to do an Aveira, and you choose that you're going to give your life instead. What happens in those cases? Take a look at source number 9. Rama begins by saying, In any scenario where you're supposed to do the Avera, you're supposed to eat the cheeseburger and preserve your life, and you don't, you decide you're too big a tzaddik, you can't do it, you're going to give up your life. V'neharag v'lo avar, you decide you're going to be killed and not violate, says the Rambam, ha-reza mischaye v'nasha. You are almost held accountable for your own death. You don't think you did something great and holy. You actually made a very grave mistake. And the Rambam says you are indeed held accountable for that mistake. It's not a universal view. The Balei HaTosfos, there's one opinion in the Balei HaTosfos that maintains that you can go lefnim mishur hazadin. You do have the option of going further if you choose and giving up your life even when you're not required to. But certainly the prevalent view is that of the Rambam that he expresses here, that you are indeed held responsible if you give your life when you are not supposed to. And what about on the other side of things? Let's go to skip to the third line, the second paragraph. If the Torah says you should give your life and not do an Avera, the Avar velo neharag, and you did the Avera, you didn't give your life as you were supposed to, let's say in the instances of Avodah Zarah, the Arayah, Shechita Damim, cases where you are supposed to give your life, the Rambam says, Hareza Mechalal Es Hashem. You've engaged in Chilul Hashem. But the Rambam offers a critical qualification of this in the first bold line of Suras number 9. But Aval P came, says the Rambam. Somebody did Avodah Zarah. Now, ordinarily, the punishment for Avodah Zarah is death. It's capital punishment. In this case, he did Avodah Zarah under duress. Someone said, if you don't do the Avodah Zarah, I'm going to kill you. They did the Avodah Zarah. The Rambam says it was very bad. Chilul es Hashem. Aval P came, the Rambam says, bold of Suras number 9. Mibnesha avar ba'ones, because he did it under duress, in malkinoso, in sarach lomash, in mimisinoso, based in afilu hara ba'ones. The Rambam says we don't give them capital punishment. We don't give them even corporal punishment, even in instances where they took the life of someone else. Should they have done so? Absolutely not. But if they did, and they did it again under threat of death, they did it under duress, they are not punished. He says, we don't give malchus, we don't put anyone to death, unless they do so willingly with witnesses and warning. He gives a proof from Molech, from people who give their children over to Molech, to Avodah Zarah. The Rambam continues in bold, and if it's true about Avodah Zarah, which the Rambam says is hamura min hakol, going back to our theme, Avodah Zarah is somehow more strict than all. If you did so under duress, you don't get any of these punishments. Certainly that is true of the other mitzvos that are included in the Torah as well. And this is indeed, the opinion adopted by the Ran. You might have said, okay, so the Ran radically expands Yaharag Val Yavor. Even in cases where it's just an outwards perception, the Ran says, give up your life. The Rambam contracts it, said you shouldn't give up your life, but if you did, don't worry, we don't punish you. The Ran, source number 10, adopts this view of the Rambam as well. We'll just, again, look at the bold just in order to save time. The Ran agrees that if you did it, you are patur from Misa Space and you're patur from Mish. So it leaves us trying to explain what Avodah Zarah is about. And again, these are really just two instances of a much larger discussion about this whole notion of Yihar Val Yavar, of giving your life to Avodah Zarah. But I want to explore why it is on the one hand that we dramatically expand it such that even there's an outward perception you have to give your life. And yet on the other hand, at least in terms of qualitative severity, we contract it and say that if you did do the Avodah Zarah, don't worry, you're not going to be punished for it. And in trying to assess this, I actually want to turn back to our source number 3, our original Gemara. It says you need to give your life for worshiping Avodah Zarah. Now, the Gemara here offered how many scenarios in which you need to give your life rather than violate. Now, intuitively, you'd say 3. I hear some 3s in the audience. It says, but if you look at the second bold line, you'll realize that there is also a 4th. Namely, parhesia, doing it in public. The Gemara says that if you are asked to violate any avera in public, you would have to give your life rather than violate. If you read the continuation of the Gemara, which is not recorded here on this sheet, the Gemara actually provides a 5th scenario that the Gemara calls Sh'as HaShmad, a time of religious persecution. The Gemara says that in the time of religious persecution, the Yavanim are persecuting the Chashmonaim, the Greeks are trying to eliminate Jewish faith. in those times as well, you'd have to give your life, even for something small, even ox, the sound of the Gemara says, even for a tiny mitzvah, you'd have to give up your life. And we also have this machlokas between Rabbi Ishmael and the others as to whether Avodah Zarah is really a harag v'al yavor, is included in this list of scenarios where you have to give your life or you don't. Now, here's the question that I really would like to pose now. Which category does Avodah Zarah actually fit into? Let me put it the following way. Broadly speaking, we could talk about what I would call two categories of instances where you have to give your life. There's, again, we're going to leave Avodah Zarah aside for a moment. There's Giloy Arayos Shvipas Damim, particular Averos that are deemed to be so bad that you need to give your life. And that's the Averos category. Category two is not Averos, but rather circumstances in which you need to give your life. Namely, Farhasia, public, and Sh'as, Hashmad, which is a time of persecution. Now, intuitively, if you had the group Avodah Zarah into one of those two categories, sin or circumstance scenario, where would you put Avodah Zarah? Intuitively, you'd put it in the former. It's a sin. It's an example of a sin for which you have to give your life. But when we study the actual mechayev, the psukim, the sources for Avodah Zarah, it's not at all clear that that is where Avodah Zarah should be grouped. Why does one need to give one's life in the case of farhesia, in the case where it's in public? What did the Gemara say? Back to source number three. Why is it that you have to give your life in that circumstance? Because doing so in public would create a chilul Hashem. Giving your life would create a kiddush Hashem. It's kiddush Hashem. It's all about the chilul and kiddush Hashem that creates this operative category of giving one's life or preserving one's life. When it comes to gilei arayos or shvichos damim, the Gemara gives other reasons why you have to give your life. When it comes to avodah zarah, what does the Torah say? The ohav ta es Hashem alokacha b'chol levavacha b'chol nafshacha b'chol me'odecha. You shall love Hashem with all of your soul. Is that telling me that Avodah Zarah per se is such a bad Avera that it's like a Shvichos Damim, murder, Gilei Arayos, that I can't give my life? Or is that another expression, perhaps, of the imperative of Kiddush Hashem as exemplified by one particular Avera that requires me to give my life? Now, that happens to be one of the major questions pertaining to why one gives one's life in instances of Avodah Zarah. But at least for the Rambam, we seem to be able to answer that question. Turn to source number 11. I mentioned that the Rambam places the halachos of giving one's life in the fifth parak of Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah. And how does the Rambam preface that entire parak? Kol Beis Yisrael mitzuvin al kiddush Hashem hagadol hazeh. Everyone is obligated in kiddush Hashem. And then the Rambam quotes a source text, Shene'emar, B'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael. I will be sanctified among b'nei Yisrael. Where does that pasuk ring a bell from? We saw that was the Gemara Sanhedrin's proof that you need to give your life if Arhesia, in public. Did the Gemara overtly quote that in the context of Avodah Zarah? It did not. But the Rambam quotes that as his header for the entire parak, for his entire discussion of instances where one needs to give one's life. The Rambam continues, Umuz harin shlo l'chalolo. We have a mitzvah not to be machalel Hashem, not to do chilul Hashem. Again, the same pasuk that the Gemara quoted in the context of Farhesia. And then the Rambam says, Ketzad, how is this expressed? He says, ordinarily speaking, if somebody tells you to violate an Avera, you're obligated to preserve your life, then skip down to Halacha Beis, the second to bottom line. B'med dvarim amurim, b'sh'ar mitzvos, chutz me'avodas kochavim, b'giloy arayos, b'shvichos damim. Ordinarily speaking, you violate to save your life, except for these three. These three, you give your life in order to observe Torah Hashem, in order to observe his mitzvos. And what does the proof text appear to be? V'nikdashti b'sof b'nei Yisrael. And the Rambam goes further. Again, in these three, you give up your life because of v'nikdashti b'sof b'nei Yisrael. The Rambam explicates this with even greater clarity in the Sefer HaMitzvah, source number 12. Sefer HaMitzvah, the Rambam, lo seses amach gimel, mitzvah amach gimel, the 63rd prohibition, kusha his yiranu mei chilul Hashem. It is a prohibition of defiling the name of Hashem, of chilul Hashem. Hu haveh kiddush Hashem shen estabinu ba. He said it is the opposite of kiddush Hashem. What pasuk does he quote? Look at the second line. Amr Yisala, once again, this week's parsha. Do not violate my name. Again, the pasuk that the Gemara quoted in the context of Bar Hesia. And what does the Rambam include here? Skip to the bold of source number 12. The Rambam understands that all three of these are a function of not individual averos, they are all a function of kiddush v'chilol Hashem. Now, once that's the case, perhaps we can explain our anomalies in the Ran. If this is all about chilol Hashem, that even though in that scenario where you're just picking up your coins, you're just drinking from some water, you're just taking the thorn out of your shoe, even though you're not actually doing Avodah Zarah, what have you still unfortunately achieved? You have still achieved Chilul Hashem. The outside perception is not just a Maris Ayin issue. It's not just that someone might think you did something wrong within the general principles of Maris Ayin that exist before Atara Kula. If the concern here is Chilul Hashem, then if somebody thinks you did Avodah Zarah, even if you yourself know that you didn't, you've still achieved that Chilul Hashem, and that's why the Ran entertains the possibility that you'd have to give your life even just for that external perception. And it also explains on the flip side, ironically, why you wouldn't be punished. You may second me because I'm running late. Just take it after. It also ironically explains why you wouldn't be punished in instances where you did violate. Because what prohibition have you truly violated when you were coerced? What you violated is not Avodah Zarah, but rather Chilul Hashem. Is the punishment for Chilul Hashem capital punishment? It's not. It's a very bad Avera, don't get me wrong. It's again, if you look at the Rabbah Menachem Teshuva, in certain ways, it's even worse than many other Averos, including perhaps the big three. But it's not punished liable to capital punishment. So even though we expand the scope of Yehareg Al Yavor, the fact that even external perception is included in the Halacha, if you violate it, you won't be punished because the real operative category is Chilul Hashem and not Avodah Zarah per se. Now, I think what this reflects is the centrality that Avodah Zarah plays, and but the Rambam is true for Gilui Aroyos, true for Stamim as well. That's another thing that's worthy of exploration. But the way that Avodah Zarah is more than just a narrow prohibition, but is really a broader statement about values in our lives. There's a Gemara in Chulin, in source number 13. It says, "Hamura da Amar Mar Hamura Avodas Pochavim." Rejection of Avodah Zarah is like acceptance of the Torah in its entirety. And by contrast, there are other Gersos in the Gemara that say acceptance of Avodah Zarah is kofer b'chol haTorah kula, is rejection of the entire Torah. The Ran in source number 14, perhaps unsurprisingly, relates this to our halakha of the ohavta as Hashem Elokecha, giving one's life to avoid serving Avodah Zarah. Now, why does it constitute this grave Chilul Hashem? Because I think it rejects all of the meaning and purpose and values, the foundations of all that Torah seeks to achieve for us. Take a look at what the Rambam writes five chapters earlier than our previous discussion. In source number 15, at the very beginning of Hilchos Yesod HaTorah, this is how the Rambam opens his Mishnah Torah. Yesod HaYesodos V'Amud HaChachmos Leida Sheyesh Shamatzah Rishon V'Umamti Kol Nimtza V'Kol HaNimtzah Mishamayim V'Aretz Mash B'Neim. The first most basic thing, Yisoda Yisoda, the foundation of all foundations, the pillar of all wisdom, is to know that there is indeed this primal creator upon whom all of existence is contingent. That is the most basic element of our faith. Again, it is the foundation of all. The Rambam goes on to describe that in the next several halachos, what exactly that entails. And then he really, he caps it by saying at the bottom of source 15, halach above, this is a mitzvah saseh, as we discussed last year, because the Torah says Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Chol ha'ma'ale al daito in bold, sheyesh shamaloa acher chutz mizeh. Anyone who entertains the possibility that there are other gods, i.e., trending towards the Avodah Zarah that we are discussing, over below saseh violates a prohibition. Shneamar lo yiyeh lecha Elohim acherim al panai. As the Torah says in the second Dibra that we are studying, you shall not have other gods. It's not just that you've engaged in an Avera. You have rejected the fundamental foundation upon which all else in our religious lives is contingent. In the next parak, source number 16, Rambam describes the mitzvah of Avas Hashem, Akela Nifba Ve'anora Azem, mitzvah of Avo Yiroso, Shnemar V'ohavta Es Hashem Elokecha. Again, that pasuk of V'ohavta Es Hashem Elokecha, you should love your God. He discusses that in Parak Gimel and Parak Dalet. He develops the notion of Avas Hashem more. And then in Parak Hay, as we discussed, he talks about this notion of Kiddush Betul Hashem as an expression of our faith and love for the Ribono Shel Olam. And as such, when one engages in Avodah Zarah, you've essentially thrown away everything that makes life meaningful, everything that invests life with value. Perhaps the most acute formulation of that is the Sefer HaChinuch, the Mitzvah Reish Tzadi Vav. And he describes this mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, Shnemar V'Nikdash Ti B'Sof B'nei Yisrael. He describes the whole idea of giving one's life to preserve certain mitzvos. He says in bold of source number 17, Shoresh Mitzvah Zu Yadua. The reasoning behind this mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem is known. Ki Adam Lo Nivra, Rak La'avod Baro. Recognize why you are drawing breath in the first place. Recognize why you are here in the first place. Recognize what this is all about in the first place. It's all about something higher. There's a higher purpose. There's a higher value. That is service of Hashem. Misha'enu Moser Gubo La'avodas Adonav Enenu Ovetov, Ovetov. Harei b'nei Adam Yimsiru Nafshosom Adonaihem. Ha'vachomer al-mitzas melech malchei amlachim ha'kadosh baruch hu. He says, we all have things that are basic yesodos that make our lives meaningful. We all have things that we are willing to give our lives for. Says, people have it for all sorts of earthly masters. People engage in great acts of patriotism, which they're willing to sacrifice themselves for homeland, for country, and for all sorts of causes. He says, if you are unwilling to give your life for the basic yesodos, the basic fealty to the Ribono Shel Olam, then you've lost what makes life worth living. In essence, the argument of the Chinuch, and I would argue what emerges from the broader discussion of the Rambam as well, is that giving up one's life to avoid doing Avodah Zarah is not calling for great sacrifice. Of course, in a practical sense, it is calling for great sacrifice. But conceptually, it's not asking for sacrifice. It is asking us to reassess what makes our life worth living. And at a certain point, what things are we willing to give our life for? If you give up the entire foundation of all that Torah is worth, then yes, you continue to draw breath. But your existence seeks to be a redeemed existence. It seeks to be a meaningful existence. You continue to live, but without any of the value that life is truly worth. In certain ways, it reminds me of a passage that I'm very fond of from Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. Man's Search for Meaning, Frankl talks about the importance of meaning orientation, the importance for meaning in one's life. And he's talking about it almost in an opposite circumstance. Rather than giving one's life, he's talking about it in the context of preserving one's life. But the passage reads as follows. Basically, for a broader context, he was talking about the importance when he was in the camps of having something that one was aspiring for, of having something that gave your life meaning. And he speaks autobiographically, as he does frequently, for those who have read Man's Search for Meaning. I assume many of you have. If you haven't, please do. But Frankl speaks autobiographically, and he says, for him, what gave him meaning, what enabled him to continue, was his desire to publish. He had all this research, it was seized. He really wanted to share his knowledge that he had learned before the war, through the camps, with the world. And like that was his mission. He said, I'm going to get through this and I'm going to share what I've learned with the world and I'm going to make the world a better place in the process. That was his mission. But he speaks about what happened when people lost that sense of mission, when they lost a sense of purpose, when they lost something that gave meaning to their lives. And what happens if one's groping for a meaning has been in vain? This may well result in a fatal condition. Let us recall, for instance, what sometimes happened in extreme situations, such as prisoner of war camps or concentration camps. In the first, as I was told by American soldiers, a behavior pattern crystallized to which they referred as give up itis. In the concentration camp, this behavior was paralleled by those who one morning at 5 refused to get up and go to work and instead stayed in the hut on the straw wet with urine and feces. Nothing, neither warnings nor threats, could induce them to change their minds. And then something typical occurred. They took out a cigarette from deep down in their pocket where they had hidden it and started smoking. At that moment, we knew that for the next 48 hours or so, we would watch them dying. Meaning orientation had subsided, and consequently, the seeking of immediate pleasure had taken over. He says there were circumstances when people lost all that they had to live for, and as a result, they just resigned themselves to giving up on life. And almost again, in a parallel but almost opposite sense, the Torah tells us we need to think about what are those core values that give our lives meaning orientation, that make life meaningful.
And when asked to give up all that makes life meaningful, that the mere imperative, the animalistic drive to continue drawing breath, the animalistic biological drive towards self-preservation is not sufficient to justify going forward. It requires us to give up all that gives life meaning. And I think also, I'm going to use this as an opportunity to reflect upon the two people in whose memory we're doing this year tonight. Because I think there were people who very much served as an example of what it means to live with meaning. If part of the message of Avodah Zarah is that when a life is devoid of meaning, then perhaps there may be circumstances where we're required to give it up. Then the opposite message or a derivative message for us who live life on a daily basis, who fortunately do not live in the realities of the Baalei HaTosis in which we're asked to engage in Avodah Zarah under duress, is to engage in that same kind of examination of whether we are leading our lives by the meaning that really, again, serves as the foundation that makes life meaningful. When we talk about Ruchi Sharetz and Chaim Feigenbaum, I think they were both people who lived their life that way, and as a result, lived life, again, to really the very last moments for both of them, in a way that sought to hold on to those most meaningful parts of life, and really sought to inspire others. I know the story of Ruchi is legendary, of course. She faced a fatal condition, but wanted to make sure that others who were facing the same condition were not going to face it alone. She created ways to make sure that they didn't do so, and even long after her passing, that still continues, that continues ala yom hazeh. And Chaim as well. Chaim spent his life trying to inspire other Jews. I count myself among them. And he made sure that till his very last moments, he was holding on to those parts that make life meaningful, and was making sure that he instilled them in others. And if there's anything we could do to take from Avodah Zarah, again, even though fortunately we don't face it on a regular basis, is perhaps that reflection on what exactly are those yisoda yisodas? What are those most basic foundations of our lives? What are the components that make life meaningful? What are the things that really make life worth living? And let us make sure that as we live our lives, we are being true to them as best as we possibly can.
Thank you so much. Beautiful. Nice to see you. 1 second.